Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Right now, I really wanted to sing the Fievel scene theme song, you know, like, it's in America. I don't know. I haven't seen that show in a really long time. But.
Yeah, it feels really, really good to be home. I just, you know, space and my bed, my fridge full of my food. Yeah, it was sort of towards the end of our trip, it was that like classic, like, I really want to be home, but I really don't want to go because I'm having fun. And I really don't want to be on an airplane for a million hours. That was that part too. With two kids, but we made it and I'm home.
Yay. Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
I held down the fort here in America. As you can see, I didn't let anything change while you were gone.
You know, I did my giant, because there was no food in my fridge. So I did my, like, giant Whole Foods shopping this morning, and they had changed around everything in the store. And I was like, well, I don't know where anything is now. I had to ask people. And actually, it was obviously a new enough change that the people didn't know either. I was like, all right. Eventually, I found stuff.
Well, you're not talking any funnier either. It's kind of disappointing.
Maybe I need to be there longer. It was actually really interesting. So this trip, I think it was the first time that the Canadian accent sounded so foreign to me. Like, the last couple of years I've been able to, like, hear it really clearly. You know, for the longest time I couldn't hear the difference. I honestly could not tell any kind of difference between how Canadians talked and most of America. Like, I could understand a Minnesotan accent or a Southern accent, but, you know, sort of East Coast or West Coast even, like, versus Canadian, I just didn't hear the difference. And now I really, really clearly hear the difference. And every once in a while, I would slip back into it and it would sound foreign to my own ears to hear that. I mean, even the cadence come out of my own mouth, then it was a really surreal experience. But I will still say cilantro for you.
Excellent. That's all that really matters.
So I have something really to say.
Okay.
Happy podcast anniversary 100th episode milestone show.
Yay. We're old. We're triple digits.
Woo woo. Our show's old. That's different, right? No, I'm getting pretty old.
Yeah, I think we're getting old with the show.
We should, like, listen back to some of our early episodes and be like, we were so young.
No, we shouldn't. We shouldn't. I've done that. It's a mistake. Because then when people are writing in and they're like, I've listened all the way to your shows, all the way back to the beginning, and you're like, oh, I'm so sorry.
You remember back in the beginning when, like, we didn't, like, organ meats?
Yeah. I'm still not going to support kidneys and sardines. Sorry.
All right. So next year, we'll be talking about our 150th show. And it'll be, remember when you didn't support kidneys and sardines?
Listen, I encourage everyone, if you can stomach that food, by all means, go for it. I am not there. So, okay, speaking of food, I need to address two things, and I'll do it really quickly because we have a fun show lined up for people. first of all, people have asked me like a bazillion questions about this thing that I'm doing. And because I Instagram, like everybody knows what I'm doing, exactly when I'm doing it. And I can't kind of experiment on myself before I blog about something weeks later, which is what a normal person would do. So, I am currently doing something called carb cycling, and I'm following Chris Powell's methods in his book, but I'm adapting it with paleo methodologies. I'm obviously not eating greens and beans. And I'm doing that with the hope of gaining strength and leaning out. It's one of the few plans that are intended for fat loss that...
I was going to say, does he do carb cycling with his clients on extreme
weight
loss? Yes,
he does.
Interesting. Maybe I should read his book.
Yes, he does.
So, they actually like the show.
Yes, as do I.
Yeah. And it's one of the few things in my household that I'm the only person who watches. So it's kind of like it's kind of like my thing.
It's kind of like the guilty indulgence that we all have, but are afraid to admit.
Well, I so relate in so many ways because I was morbidly obese and I do have skin that I would like to have chopped off. So like it, I don't know. Plus it's like CrossFit-y and I don't know, and it's all about nutrition, and it's not about starvation, and it's good habits and all
and
that
it's over
stuff.
A year, and, you know, it's there's a lot of things about it, and I like that he gets into, like, the emotional parts of why people are,
overeating or whatever bad habits they've got going.
Yeah.
They don't really share that much about the diet methodology on that show. Like, they'll give you little tidbits, so I was interested to know that he's doing carb cycling with his...
Yeah, so he has several books. I have one of his books, and I am going through and I'm figuring out for my own N=1 experiment what parts of it I want to adapt and what parts of it I'm not going to adapt, i.e. eating bread and beans. And so for, I think today was day 6, I've been carb cycling. And
because I'm geeky and curious... Can I ask you exactly what your cycle looks like?
Oh, my gosh. See, you and everyone else. Okay. So, my cycle...
Here's
what's going to happen. I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to say whether or not it works. Okay, so here's the thing. I have been doing it for, like, less than a week. So, I have absolutely not comfortable giving my recommendations or not recommendations on the program yet. What I can say is that... In the few days that I've been doing it, I definitely have felt stronger and performed well in the gym, even in like Metcon type scenarios that normally, for example, I would only want to do 2 of, like I did 3 of yesterday, and that was day 4 or 5 in a row of training. So usually after I've trained that many days in a row at the end of Metcon conditioning, like I'm done and I only want to do 1 or 2 rounds of conditioning, but I did 3 and I did them well. So I think from that perspective, the strength and performance piece is working so far. And that's my biggest concern because I have been very hesitant to work on anything related to leaning out because all quote unquote diet programs usually affect muscle and contribute to muscle loss as well as fat loss. So Chris's program, carb cycling in general, some people do carb backloading and some people do something called carb night. I investigated them all and I decided what I wanted to try was carb cycling because it's more tailored to people who are fit and performance related and good that way. So I so far have seen the positive. I have also seen the negative that has been warned about on the things that I've read, which is that the first couple of weeks you can actually gain inches and gain weight from water bloating. So that has happened to me. I'm not exactly thrilled about it. But supposedly in 2 to 3 weeks, what'll happen is my body will no longer feel the need to hold on to that water and then really start being able to efficiently burn the fat on the days that aren't carb days, on the days that are high fat, low carb days. And then there are days that are low fat, high carb days. It has been really awkward and weird for me to figure out all of like high carb, low fat. I don't even know what that looks like anymore, let alone within a paleo template. So when and if I work on this and write about it, I might do like a, hey, this is my plan post, just because I'm getting so many questions about it. I will definitely share kind of the recipes and the things that I'm eating, because you can't eat a sweet potato at every meal for, you know, 5 days, because that's how many training days I have. I would turn orange and want to hurt somebody off of that many sweet potatoes. So, fortunately for me, because of the paleo approach and AIP, I have been able to incorporate back a lot of foods that aren't necessarily within the paleo template, but are within my paleo template. So I have been able to incorporate back rice and high quality yogurt. So those are the two things that I'm using right now to supplement my paleo diet, to give myself more protein, more low fat protein for the Greek yogurt. And then I'm doing rice to give myself more carbohydrates. So I will let everybody know how that goes. I will not know for like a month whether or not I start leaning out. Like, that's how long it takes. So I told Matt that I would do it for 6 weeks and I would like follow the program as best as I could figure it out, and we would see where I was in 6 weeks. And the only thing that will stop me is if I start not feeling strong, like, cause that's my biggest thing. And I've made that clear to everybody. But so far the program gives a lot of information on how to kind of troubleshoot if you're not losing weight, and how to troubleshoot if you're not getting the strength that you want. So I feel really comfortable with what I'm doing in terms of keeping my strength up. So that's what I'm doing. And it feels really awkward and weird. And like, I don't like having to think about my food. I've never, like, Sarah, I can't put butter on my rice and I can't put butter on my sweet potato because I can't eat fats and carbs in the same meal. It's like not fun.
Yeah, that sounds really foreign to me.
Yes, it's very foreign to me as well. But it is awesome to get to eat as many carbs as I wanted.
Right.
Like, I sat down yesterday after working out and had like a big bowl of white rice. I cried a little tear that it didn't have butter on it, but it was still like, you know, there's pluses and minuses on the whole thing. So I will figure out if it works for me. I will figure out all of it over the next, you know, 6 weeks. But in the meantime, people begged me to talk about it on the podcast. So there you go. So the second thing that I wanted to say was that I teased a couple of months or weeks ago that I was going to work on another project, potentially. I think I might have even said the word podcast. And I have secured a co-host to start Strong Woman Radio with me, so that I will not have to bombard everybody with all of my strong woman talk all the time here on the Paleo View. So I do not have any information for that yet, other than I can confirm for you that it's going to happen. Matt bought a special microphone for me to do in person with one of the girls at the gym that I work out with, and I will be happy to make formal announcements on the blog and here later when I have all that put together. But thrilled that we can create a resource for people about strength for women, because it's become kind of my new passion. And there's only so many of you that want to listen to it, and there's some of you that want way more of it, and there's some of you that want way less of it. So now I'm just going to put all of it in a special place where I can geek out about ridiculous things, like, you know,
like having baths full of ice.
Baths full of ice and carb cycling and how to get a log rolled up your person when you have giant speed bumps, and what do you do when you pee yourself on heavy lifting? Like, all the things that the dudes aren't talking about in the strength training stuff, that's what Strong Woman Radio is going to be about. So we're super excited about it. And it won't just be, you know, the sport of strong man. We're calling it Strong Woman Radio because we're hoping that all women who are interested in strength training will find it useful. So my co-host will be what was originally my nemesis in the strongman world. My very first competition, the woman who gave me a run for my money, has since become a friend of mine. She's hysterical. She's also a certified CrossFit coach and amazingly strong. She's been doing this for years, and she's hysterical. So I'm really excited for everybody to meet Vivian. And in the meantime, I've like forced her to start a blog and like get things out on the internet so that people can find out who she is when we actually make this thing go live. So there you go. Big teasers. I don't know what's going on with me. I'm not even the same person anymore. What are you going to do? I'm carb cycling, I'm eating rice, and I'm clinically insane enough to start a second podcast.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
You know I'm still going to ask you, like...
No, I want to talk about it all the time.
Questions. And I hope that I'm still allowed to ask you those questions.
Of course.
Okay.
I just need more time to talk about it.
Yeah.
Probably what'll happen is you'll listen to that podcast and then we'll record this podcast and you'll be like, Stacey, tell me more about blah, 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 blah.
Right, exactly. Yep. I'm already planning that as definitely the future. So I'm trying to figure out if I have anything to say.
How were your book signings, by the way?
Oh, they were awesome. So I just last weekend had a book signing in Vancouver with Mickey Truscott of Autoimmune Paleo, and her book, signing her book, The Autoimmune Paleo Cookbook, and Russ Crandall of The Domestic Man in his book, The Ancestral Table. And like both people I love, both bloggers. I love their blogs. I love them as people. I love their books.
Almost as much as me.
Almost. Pretty close.
I happen to like those people as well. Russ is a very good friend of mine. So
yeah, and I just, they're some of the most wonderful people to hang out with. And did you know that Russ can sing? He has
no. That did not come up in the "Tell Me Something You Don't Know About Me" podcast we did.
I know, and I don't feel like I should like reveal any more. But he has like Radiohead beautiful voice. Like,
crazy. That man has no end to his talents.
I know. And he plays guitar. And he's ridiculously good. And so it just turned out that Mickey plays piano and Mickey's husband plays cello. And he happened to have a violin at his house that he made himself. And I play violin.
Oh my gosh.
And so we ended up like jamming.
It's the autoimmune band.
Right. And playing for each other. And we just... So we had a super late night. We signed in Vancouver at Book Warehouse on West Broadway, not East Broadway. And just so everybody knows, West Broadway and East Broadway are not the same thing. I went to the wrong place and then I was late. And it was like just an awesome signing. We all talked and then we did a question and answer. It was supposed to be it was supposed to end at 7 and we went until after 9. Like the store stayed open for us because we were still going. And then we were starving, so we grabbed some food really quickly. There's a Whole Foods about a block away. And then we drove from Vancouver to Seattle that night. Mickey's amazing husband actually drove us while we listened to Radiohead in the car. And then so we were all, like, none of us are used to going to bed at, you know, 1:30 in the morning. That's kind of a, like, I haven't stayed up, you know, for New Year's for like 8 years. So I was like, wow, it's like tomorrow and I'm not asleep. This is weird. He thinks we just kind of like hung out with their backyard chickens and then we had a really great breakfast and then we played music all morning and then it was time to go to the signing. It was like so much fun. I haven't done that in forever, like in just years and years and years and years and years. And then our Seattle signing was at Elliott Bay Books, which is an awesome bookstore. Oh, Book Warehouse in Vancouver is also an awesome bookstore. They were just, both stores were amazing hosts for us. And we had an absolutely ridiculous turnout in Seattle. And it was just awesome. And basically we were there until it was time for me to leave to the airport. So it was again, like, you know, it was way longer than what any of us actually anticipated, just because, you know, there were so many great questions. We just had, you know, there was just so many people and so many people to connect with. And, it was really awesome. Probably a couple of my favorite book signings, really. It was amazing. And then I flew back, from Seattle to Victoria to reunite with my family. And then we all, flew home yesterday, so I'm feeling a little sick of airports, but I really know my way around SeaTac now.
Awesome.
Yeah, so those are good. And now I'm right in the trying to decide where I'm going to be going for book events for the cookbook. And it's something I actually really need to start hammering down this week. So that's in my very, very, very long to-do list. What is it about vacations that means that you have 10 times as much work when you come back?
Yeah, it just piles up.
Yeah, it's not fun. So I'm trying to figure that out. My four-year-old, the day before I left for Vancouver, cried for an hour because she wanted to come with me. And so I ended up somewhere in there promising that I would take her on a book signing, just her and me. It seemed like the right thing to say at the time. And then I thought about it, like, where can I go that's going to be fun for a four-year-old?
Maybe Tennessee? That's close to you, right? No. So geographically impaired.
It's a few hours drive, but it wouldn't be terrible. I was kind of thinking we have friends and family in Toronto. So I was thinking maybe I could plan a Toronto event and then she could hang out.
Could she come to the New York one with us?
Possibly. We could maybe turn that into a family.
Yeah.
Family fun time.
Because I'll probably have the family. All right. Well, we'll figure all that out later.
Now it's like my brain's like, I'm jet lagged, so the wheels start turning really, really slowly. It's been really interesting how distractible I've been today. So I don't know if people will hear that in the podcast at all, but I'm like literally like squirrel. It's been really, my brain's not normally like that. So hopefully it will get over that quickly.
It's interesting. The book that I was reading described the process that I'm going through as being like, you will have that as you make these transitions and you hop from carb days to fat days. Like, expect cloudy, expect to be cranky and have cloudy headedness and other things. And I was telling my team at work today, I was like, just let you know, like specifically in the days that I'm not training, I could be potentially cranky for the next couple of weeks. And they all looked at me and they're like, we need a schedule. We need to know when your training days are. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Okay, so we, as promised, did a data call on what everybody wanted to know and ask us anything. And much to my chagrin, many of the questions were like regular podcast questions.
Do you know what I think that means? I think that means that people already know us really well because we already kind of like
tell them everything.
Spill our guts every week. Yeah.
Cool. So did you do some fancy weeding or something to figure out what...
I didn't. As promised, actually Tamar did, one of my assistants. And so she picked the questions, so I had no say. And I'm going to read them. I'm not even going to skip over any.
And in full disclosure, you emailed it to me. I saw it come in and I purposely didn't look at it because I was like, oh, I hope it's interesting stuff that I'll be surprised by. We'll see.
Well, you're going to like the first question from Jenny, which was a question asked on my Facebook page. And she wrote, I follow this page every day. I don't know anything about Stacy. Who is she?
Fascinating. if you want to know who I am, just follow me on Instagram.
True dat. Yeah.
Yeah. I am whomever. What did you say this woman's name was? See, this is what happens when I'm not looking at notes.
Jenny.
I am the mother of paleoparents.com. We wrote several cookbooks, and our blog is full of information, but really, if people want to get to know me, like, the best way to do that is following me on Instagram, because I put everything on there, and I'm really open, and I respond to people's comments. If I don't respond, I've read it, and I'm choosing not to respond, like when someone says recipe, when I've posted in their recipe, we'll be going to the blog soon. but yeah, that's me.
What's you? You're a strong woman competitor.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost 100 pounds, more than 100 pounds.
I have three boys, ages almost 9, 6, and 4. When I started paleo, Wesley was a newborn, so I know how long I've been paleo by how old he is.
Cole's almost 9.
Shh. Well, I'm not going to let him have a birthday, and I'm not feeding him vegetables. We're just going to pretend it's not happening.
All right. Strap some books on his head.
Exactly.
Really heavy. Grab some
stunt his growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another question I saw that I don't know if it's in there or not, but someone was like, I don't know if it came through mine or yours, were like, you guys post all these treat recipes all the time. What do you really eat? Is that a question that's in there?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay. That's so the only, that's the only one that
hold
I saw.
It.
Okay.
Okay. So our next question is from Leanne. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I wonder about the products you are using. Are you, I think this was specifically after listening to one of our beauty podcasts where we talked about like all the different stuff we use.
Yeah.
Are you still in love with everything? What stuck and what new products have you introduced? I'm especially interested in Dirty Mouth Primal Tooth Powder and your dental health. Are you still using it? Stacy, how was your dental checkup? Have you changed your families over from conventional toothpaste? I just placed an order this week for my own tooth powder in the hopes that it will help sensitivity and fire and ice just because it sounds awesome. Thanks for the motivation and the inspiration. The two of you are a shot of happiness when I tune in.
Sweet. I'm using almost all the same things that I said that I'm using in this intervention post. I haven't been back to the dentist. Also, my tooth that was said to like have a small cavity and things were getting stuck in there, things aren't getting stuck in there anymore. So I don't want to admit it because Matt yells at me when I admit it, but like I just don't go to the dentist unless there's a problem. So there isn't a problem. So I haven't gone back. I'm not saying that you should do that. I'm just saying that's how I've chosen to live my life. I have really bad dental Did I say this? Like, I'm a natural redhead, and I have this weird resistance to Novocaine, the whole family of drugs of Novocaine, actually. And it's, like, been linked to this weird genetic mutation that redheads have. So when I didn't know about this, that I went to the dentist for the first time and I told the dentist I could still feel in my mouth, and he had given me 3 shots of Novocaine. He swore that I was wrong because I was like a 12-year-old girl, and he proceeded to fill the cavity anyway when I could feel it. So now I just kind of have like this thing against dentists. It wasn't his fault, but also I'm traumatically scarred for life.
He still didn't listen to you.
I know. I mean, I'm sure he thought I was BSing, but anyway. Yeah, so what were the other questions? So specific products. The other one of the products that have come out recently that I really, really like from Primal Life Organics are the rock salt sea spray that's like for
I love that too.
Right? It's like gives you a nice wave in your hair, and for my curly hair it's perfect. I've gotten really, really lazy on the dirt shampoo since I've been working out regularly. I just didn't feel like it was sufficiently getting rid of the sweat and the oil. Maybe I'll try to get in wintertime and see how that goes. So I actually found a line of products called Surface, which is a like an over-the-counter regular shampoo, but it doesn't have a bunch of junk in it, and it's made from natural, more natural things, and I feel good about using that. If I'm feeling up for it, I'll use the dirty poo shampoo maybe once a week at this point. But because I train like every single day and there's no air conditioning in the gym and I get really gross in there, I like to like scrub with bubbles. It makes me feel good. So I switched to Surface shampoo, but I still love no poo. And, so basically I'm using the Surface shampoo with the Primal Life Organics, rose sea salt spray at this time. Those are the only differences in my skin intervention post and the podcast that we had last time. I am still using the powder toothpaste stuff, except when I travel, just because I'm worried that someone's going to think that it's, what was that powder that went through the post office a couple of years ago?
Anthrax?
Yeah. I'm afraid someone's going to think it's anthrax, so I just don't travel with it. Let's see. What else? Products. Oh, you know what product I really want to try that recently came out is it called Dirty Paste or Dirty Something? And they had it at Paleo FX and
Dirty Mouth. Yeah, you tried it there.
Oh my gosh.
Didn't you get a little sample in your
I loved it.
In your bag?
No, but that was the powdery stuff. They have a gel now.
Oh,
and that's
they
what
have a gel?
That's what I tried at Paleo FX and it wasn't ready to purchase yet, and it recently came out in like the last week or two. And I need to get in on that action because it was really awesome at Paleo FX, and I like a gel. I'm not going to lie. I kind of miss the gel-ness, even though the tooth powder is working well for me. I want to try out the gel as a new on the market product. But I think that's it that I'm doing differently. I'm still using all the Primal Life Organics face stuff and Beauty Balm. I use Calm Balm, which is made by the same people that do Beauty Balm, on my muscles and bruises. I really, really like the Arnica muscle oil. I think it's called massage oil from Tropical Traditions. And
wait. Tropical Traditions has an Arnica massage oil?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I not know that?
Because we haven't talked about it on the podcast before, obviously.
Well, okay, Leanne, thank you for asking your question because you just helped me a lot.
So I really like that Arnica massage oil because I put it on after working out and kind of massaged it into the muscles, and it helps healing. So, and bruising. Dude.
Does Leanne care what I use?
Probably. I mean, she didn't ask you, but you can go ahead.
I actually use a lot of different stuff since that podcast, but a lot of different stuff that I tried because of that particular episode. So I still use Morocco Methods International mud and plant muck-based shampoos, and it's been over 2 years, and I still love them, and I love them enough that I'm really not motivated to try anything else. I know a lot of people love them. You kind of love them or hate them. They sort of either work amazingly for you, or they seem to like not work. And I know people just seem to be like one extreme or the other. But
yeah, I happen to be on the opposite end of that spectrum.
Yeah,
but.
And there's, I mean, I know lots of other people that they couldn't rinse it out of their hair, or it left their hair really greasy. With mine, it's just like silky smooth, bouncy. Love it. I use Primal Life Organics now for my face. I really like the bear. Not bear, like grr, but bear, like woo. Was that like the worst?
Was that like bear, like naked woo? Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was what it was. I mentioned already that I'm jet lagged.
Yep.
Right? It's pretty much the same as me being drunk, apparently. I just really like it. It has evening primrose oil in it, and it just made my skin just beautiful. Like, it was clearer than it had ever been, even when it was clear.
Is that from Primal Life Organics, a moisturizer, or what is that?
It's a face moisturizer. I think it's called Bare Moisturizer.
Interesting.
And they've got a cleanser that's the same. That matches it. I really like both of them. And I have Fire and Ice, and I've been too scared to try it. Have you tried it?
No, I talked to Trina about it because it's got the cayenne in it. I just wasn't willing to go there.
Yeah, that's why I'm scared to try it.
Yeah.
But I think I might now that I'm done the book. We'll see.
If you try it and it doesn't bother you, then I'll know that I can do it.
Okay. Well, we'll see how many weeks go by before
I think my skin is more sensitive than yours, so it'll be interesting. Like, you're more sensitive to nightshades than I am, but my skin in general is more sensitive than yours.
I have pretty crazy sensitive skin. I once washed my skin with something that I was clearly allergic to, and it puffed up to the point where my eyes swelled shut, and I had, like, a centimeter of nose left.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
No, that was not Primal Life Organics.
No, this was in the olden days. So I really like that. And the toothpaste that I was using got discontinued. So I, for like 8 months, I just bought a different type of toothpaste. Like, every time I bought toothpaste until I found one that I like. And I really like, it's called Carry Free. And I get the T3. And so it has something in it that neutralizes pH in the mouth. And then it has xylitol in it, and it has nanohydroxyapatite, which is the combination supposed to be really, really good for enamel. And I really like it. But one of the things I find with it is that my teeth, it doesn't get rid of stains very easily, so it seems to be really great for the enamel, but my teeth will start to stain because I drink a lot of tea. So I alternate between using that and Dirty Mouth Primal Tooth Powder because I find the baking soda and clay in it's really good for taking away stains. And then also on that show, I was in the I don't know what to use for deodorant, and I think it was Haley Mason who said she uses a salt spray.
Yeah.
I got the salt spray, and I love it, and I keep trying other things, and I keep not liking it as much as the salt spray. So I'm kind of a big fan of the salt spray, although, have you heard of AO Biome?
No.
It was in the, like, I think it was in, like, the New York Times. It had a bunch of media, and it's this new probiotic mist, and, like, the story behind it's hysterical because this guy was basically trying to impress his girlfriend, and he noticed that the horses, after when they got really sweaty after a really hard run, would kind of roll around in the dirt of the barn. He was wondering, like, why they were doing that. So he started taking samples of the dirt, and he found these, like, probiotic organisms in it that eat ammonia, which is what makes sweat smell so tangy. Tangy's, I don't know if that's the right word. Clearly, my brain's not working. And so he basically, like, covered his body in this, you know, probiotic bacteria.
You mean he rolled in the dirt?
Mm-hmm. Right. And then he didn't bathe for like 12 years to like properly grow it on him.
And what? You should have just left it back at probiotic mist because I would have been all right. Now what you're telling me is that he's turned this probiotics that he grew on his own person for 12 years of not washing and turned it into a product.
Yes.
Yeah. See, there are lines that people cross.
I'm pretty sure this is how, like, the, like, bad guys in superhero movies develop, right?
Well, like, what made him decide that 12 years was the right amount of years for those probiotics to develop? I mean, not 10,
well,
not
I think,
5.
I think he spent the amount that all that time actually, like, studying the strain, and they've determined that it's actually a natural strain, but it's very, very slow growing. And so what happens is if you bathe once a day, you're actually like killing it off every day.
I really would have been interested if you would have just left it a probiotic mist, but
you
knowing,
can pretend that
no,
I say that.
I can't. Now that I know that some person grew it on his body by rolling in the dirt, like I'm telling you, we all have to draw our line somewhere.
I think he actually sampled it and then isolated it and grew it in the lab and then misted his body with it and then grew it on his body for 12 years.
Do you have anything else to add to this question?
Anyways, I'm trying it. It's been like a week and a half, and I don't know if I like it yet.
Please don't send me, like, scrapes of your skin.
I'm not doing that.
Awesome.
Shall I move on to another question?
I think we're long overdue for our next question.
All right. This one is from Nancy. How do you handle dining out with friends or family?
You know, I think it's interesting. It's a good question, but from Sarah and I's perspective, we've been doing this for 4 years and we're both like authors. So our friends and family are a lot more like understanding and patient about our needs at this point. I think the real question is probably like, you know, what, how do we manage it, you know? And from that perspective, I've learned to navigate a menu and know that there are certain things that are more likely edible for me. It became much more harder when we gave up nightshades eating in a restaurant. We also follow the 80-20 rule. So, you know, there are things that the kids eat, like when we go out of the house is their opportunity to eat things like gluten-free bread. One of their favorite places to eat is the Silver Diner. I don't know if everybody has that, but where we are, they serve local produce. They have all kinds of gluten-free breads and stuff, so the kids can get, you know, French toast, or Cole likes to get a bacon tomato grilled cheese. Like, that's their opportunity to eat their 20%, because when they're in the house, like, there is nothing else here. So they're just, they know the rules. There's no high fructose corn syrup, there's no red food dye, and there's no gluten. Those are like the absolute rules. So if they go out, you know, to the movies with their grandfather or something like that, I ask them to respect the rules, but they're their own people and make their own choices, and sometimes they don't, and then they come back to me sick and cranky, and we deal with it. for dealing with family. I think in the beginning, you know, I just tried not to make a big deal out of it. Like, if you order a salad with meat and ask for olive oil and balsamic on the side, most people are going to just think you're being healthy, you know? Whereas, like, I just tried not to have a dissertation about, you know, why I had to eat weird and why, you know, what I was doing and why, until I'd been doing it for a lot longer and felt more comfortable with it and had it under my belt and had lost weight and gained health. And then they were willing to kind of understand where I was coming from.
Cool. I basically have the same story, except that I hardly ever.
Except you don't go out.
I mean, I certainly did traveling, and I do traveling, and I did traveling with my kids. I got glutened at one restaurant. I got dairied at another. And to me, it's just, I'm a good cook, and I enjoy cooking. I don't find it stressful at the end of a long day. It's something that I find relaxing and meditative. So, and I like the food that I make. So there's really not a huge incentive for me to eat out because I don't mind cooking. I like my food and I don't gluten or dairy myself. So,
good job,
and
Sarah.
I don't have to, you know, have a migraine after getting dairied. I don't have to wake up at 2:30 in the morning throwing up because I got glutened, and then I'm happier. So, you know, when I have to do it, I use all the same tricks that you do, but I basically almost never do it.
Cool.
Okay, so this next question is from Paleo Granny, and I got to meet Paleo Granny in Vancouver, and she's awesome. So
awesome.
Here's my question. I'll try and read it in a Canadian accent. No, I won't be able to. I'll just sound like a American making fun of a Canadian then. all right. Oh, to be in between. All right. So Paleo Granny asks, if you absolutely don't feel like cooking after a long day, what do you feed your family? I think I just kind of answered this one for myself. What do you do?
I don't feed my family.
There's just survival of the fittest.
My husband feeds the family. And when my husband doesn't feel like feeding the family, he usually makes hot dogs because we have like U.S. Wellness Meats hot dogs in our freezer all the time. And he'll make hot dogs and then carrots. Like, he'll either cut up carrots or make baby carrots and let the boys choose ketchup or mustard. That's when he really doesn't feel like cooking, that's what he feeds them. If he doesn't feel like cooking, usually there's soup in the fridge because he makes a big pot of soup for me once a week. So even if there's nothing, if he doesn't want to cook, I can heat up soup. Or I too will have hot dogs. Or often that's when I stop for food on the way home from the gym. And that's usually when we have sushi or Peruvian chicken or something like that.
Awesome. I always cook, even when I'm tired.
I think, like, if people are looking for tips on that, like, we have done shows where we talk about like
our
batch cooking
meals
and our fast meals and our snack foods and what we buy from stores or vendors that are prepackaged. Like, there are so many options these days. Like, my kids would just be thrilled to have a paleo kit and an apple with sun butter for dinner. Like, they're pretty easygoing kids, so we don't, like, they're getting a fat and they're getting vitamins and minerals. Like, in my family, it just doesn't have to look like a meal every time we eat, as long as we know that they're getting protein, fat, carbs, vitamins, minerals at every meal. We don't worry about it, you know. Kids are interesting.
So much as I don't feel like having a battle with my kids over getting them to eat, although that's less and less now, but what I do is breakfast for dinner night, because my kids just, they just love scrambled, like, we'll have scrambled eggs. I'll do a meat for my husband and I, just because we just don't get full on scrambled eggs. Like, we'd have to eat a lot of eggs. So we'll usually split a steak or split a pork chop or something as well, or maybe bacon or sausage. And then we'll do waffles or pancakes using my, perfect paleo pancake recipe, and fruit, and usually like some coconut milk yogurt or something like that. And that's usually like the meal that like everybody eats and nobody complains, and everybody's happy. I usually also make green scrambled eggs and put like a billion pounds of spinach in there.
Yeah, our kids love breakfast for dinner too. And it's easy to like put it on the kids and make turn that into a positive. Like we've done it before. We're like, okay, it's omelet night. You find the vegetables in the fridge that you want to put in your omelet and then mix it up together. Cause like my kids can scramble an egg. And then the only thing that Matt has to do is pour it into a pan. Like, and they're so excited. They got to choose their dinner and he got to do nothing. So, but I feel like even that's a time investment more than just like microwaving hot dogs. So
that's true. Yeah. It's for me, it's not so much a cooking, like trying to avoid cooking things so much as trying to avoid long protracted meals where we're like, eat some more meat. No, you may not have that until you eat the rest of your vegetables or whatever it is, just because my kids are in that phase. Well, my oldest never left that phase. Paleo Granny asks a follow-up question. How often do you cheat?
How do you define cheat? I don't like the word cheat. I choose to not eat within the paleo template on probably 3 times a week. I mean, what I would consider 80-20, like I've counted up kind of looking back at my meals for the week and I'm like, yeah, that worked out to about 20%. When I am eating paleo, I focus really a lot on nutrient density. I focus on eating super healthful foods, lots of vegetables, broth, organ meats, seafood, so that when I choose to have, for example, Reuben on gluten-free bread at Silver Diner or a nacho when Matt goes to a Mexican restaurant, I'm not that worried about it because I know that I'm eating such nutrient-dense, healthful food the rest of the time. I have learned that I need to abstain almost entirely from sweets in order to not want them every day. And that's just something about me personally. For everybody, it's going to be different. I know for some people it's starch, for some people it's salt, for some people it's, you know, different things. But for me, sweets are such a trigger food for a downward spiral. And if I just abstain from them entirely, I don't think about them and I don't want them. But the minute that I have one, it makes me want more and more and more and more. And we've talked before about the cycle of then not sleeping and then wanting more sugars and all that kind of stuff. So for me, I try to limit the amount of sweets that I have. If I do give in to sweets, I try, if we're making it in the house, to choose one of the really low sweetened recipes that we have, like our note meal cookie recipe or a chia seed pudding recipe where we're putting like almost no sweetener in it at all. Or like we have date sweetened ice cream. We have a recipe for creamy, dreamy frozen custard. Like those are the things that I'll choose if I really want a treat where I feel like, okay, I can have one serving of that and kind of move on. And it doesn't give me the same kind of sugar addiction that if I ate like I took Sarah to Happy Tart, which is like a gluten-free bakery in the area. If I go have something from there, it's like all I can think about for weeks is going back, you know?
I still have dreams. I got to plan a signing in the DC area just so I can go back.
That's the one you should bring your daughter to.
Yes, totally. Yeah, for me, it's like if I stick with 85% chocolate, I'm fine. I can have like a square and then I'm fine and I don't crave it. And if I have 80% chocolate, then I like have to have more and I will eat the entire bar and then I'll be craving more sweets. And it's really interesting to have that line. So I try and stick with 85% or darker. So for me, cheating, because for me, a cheat is always a sweet and it always starts a vicious cycle. And I'm usually craving it in the first place because of stress. If I'm there's not a how often, there's a like falling off the wagon and then getting back on it. And it's, if I'm on the wagon, I don't really cheat. I mean, it's, you know, a carefully thought out serving of rice, maybe once every few weeks. But I don't often eat off-plan things. Maybe I might have some popcorn at a movie, like we've talked about before. That's like one of my greatest weaknesses. It's my kryptonite. And unfortunately, I actually seem to handle it really well. I'm just scared that someday I won't handle it. So I keep those, you know, those treats to pretty occasional. But what happens is I'll get stressed and I'll have, there'll be some kind of reason why I need to make a paleo cookie. You know, it's like a birthday party in one of my kids' classes or something. I need to have a substitute treat. And then I'll have one, and I'll have another one, and then I'll have another. And I'm just like, I can't stop. And then for as long as those cookies are around, even if I put them in the freezer, they like call my name. But if I don't even have one, then I'm fine. So, you know, that's when I'll find something like 85% chocolate or maybe a piece of fruit or something else that's not going to start that vicious cycle. So for me, it's more of a, it's more of a, like, if I'm cheating, it's because I fell off the wagon and I'm just eating too much sugar and I don't feel well. And usually if that happens to me, it's a day or two. Like, I've gone through this enough in my life to recognize it and know that it's happening and know that the sooner I, you know, get, you know, sort of, I don't know, force myself to get back in line, that the easier it's going to be. And even when I'm like super stressed, super tired and all of those things that make me crave sugar, it's usually not more than like a couple of days where I'm sort of in this, you know, cycle. So, I mean, in that sense, it's 80-20, but it's like all day for 2 days, but it's only 20% of days.
Well, I will say that increasing healthy carbohydrate, like what I would call healthy carbohydrate would be non-sugary carbohydrate, has been really wonderful for my sugary cravings. Like I think that there is something to the fact that once you've been metabolically broken, your body burns carbohydrates a certain way. And so, like, if your body isn't running efficiently because you're either tired or stressed or whatever, it's going to want, it tells you it wants carbohydrate. And in my case, and probably Sarah's, its immediate reaction is, you like sugar, go eat sugar. We can handle mm-hmm. sugar. We know how to do sugar. But I find that if my glycogen stores are already filled and I get to that point of stress, it doesn't drive me to want to indulge in those kinds of foods. And for some reason, I do not find food reward from, you know, sweet potato and rice and those other foods the same way I do from sweets. And so I don't consider those like cheats, you know, like that's an intentional thing that doesn't contribute to negative health for me. It, especially because I train so much, it helps my hormones be balanced and it helps me stay mentally good. So I just think it depends on how someone defines the word, but by all means, we are not paleo perfectionists in this house. And, you know, we eat Peruvian chicken and we eat sushi, like once a week. And we don't worry that the tamari has soy in it because it doesn't have gluten. And we don't worry that the yuca fries are fried in canola oil because if that's the worst thing that we do all week, like, then I'm not worried about it. So.
I like this question. It's from Sarah. If you were stranded on a desert island, what food items would you most want to have with you? And what 5 books would you want to take?
Oh my goodness. Wow. I'm alone on this desert island or am I with my family?
Well, you're stranded, so I don't know. Assume you're alone.
God, I've never been alone.
Oh dear. Okay, assume you're with your family.
Well, if I were with my family, then I would let each of us pick one book, and I
assume you're alone. I take it back. Assume you're alone.
Okay. So you can see that I did not read these questions beforehand. How many food choices do I get?
5.
So I would be pretty practical, and I would choose things that would, like, sustain me. I would probably take paleo kits. Particularly, I like the apple pie and the mango because they would have fruit and meat and nuts in them. And I would have to bring something chocolate. Like, I just can't survive without chocolate. So I really like Alter Eco Midnight, I think it's called. It's like, I think it's 85% dark chocolate.
I've had that. It's good.
Yeah, it's my favorite, and it doesn't trigger sweet cravings for me. I think yuca fries for my starch. Bananas. They're a good quick snack. I have one every morning in my protein smoothies lately. Actually, I'll just change that to protein smoothie because I'm probably not going to be strong womaning on the island, but it is a food that I have every single day. And I would have to say either waffles or pancakes or Sarah's pumpkin pie custard without the crust as my like treat food that
Desert
I would need.
Desert island comfort food.
Right. So then I would need to have like chicken and yuca and waffles, because chicken and waffles is like my thing. I've just given way more than the requisite number of foods. Can I just have extra foods and no books? Can I just do that?
What would be your like one book that you would bring with you?
You know what? Honestly, I would probably bring an empty diary.
Ooh, that's such a good answer.
I don't have a lot. I don't read very much. I do a lot of my cathartic, you know, expression through writing. So I would need to write.
Okay, so if I was stranded on a desert island, I guess I'm thinking more, I can either approach this as, survival foods until...
I know, that's what I was really torn. Right? It's not practical. I'm not going to be able to cook yuca fries, but that's what I would want to eat.
Right. Is it survival foods or is it... Well, she says foods to have with you. So,
just choose a couple of
magically,
each.
Magically, my suitcase was full of food and I get to just eat my five favorite foods until I get rescued. I mean, that's how I'm going to approach this question. That's still hard, though.
Sardines, kidney.
That's a good idea. That's survival foods. My five favorite foods, the ones that I would really enjoy eating while I'm waiting for rescue. Probably either something like steak or lamb chops, maybe lamb chops. Let's pick lamb chops. And then, oh no, this is hard. So now I was making fun of you. Now I'm doing it.
And you knew it was coming.
I know. And I totally should have spent the time thinking about how I would answer the question, but I'm all jet lagged, so my brain doesn't work. So, yeah, something like lamb chops, something, you know what? I just really like lettuce. Isn't that awful? No, that's good. It's good. I would like...
Did I not choose a vegetable? Wow, that's pretty intense.
Yuca counts.
Okay.
No, but I just really enjoy lettuce. I'll sit and eat a whole head of lettuce. I just really enjoy it. Okay, so, oh no, wait, celery. I switch out lettuce for celery. Okay, lamb chops, celery,
tea.
Oh gosh, yeah. I drink a lot of tea. I'm going to totally steal your dark chocolate idea. And plantain chips.
There you go. We each have a starch. We each have a chocolate. That's all you really need.
That's right. And then books. So for me, that's kind of how would I occupy myself? So for me, I would want science textbooks. I would really enjoy maybe an advanced differential equations textbook so I could solve systems of differential equations while I was waiting for rescue. Yes, I'm that big of a nerd. And then I would really enjoy a cell trafficking book, because that's been something I've always wanted to know more about. So that's how cells shuttle proteins from, you know, basically where they're synthesized to where they need to go within the cell, and how they recycle and where things go. And there's so many thousands and thousands of your proteins that are, you know, part of that machinery. And I would really like to learn about that. I would really enjoy an advanced neurobiology textbook. I think that would be really cool. And I would need some pads of paper for notes, so I'm going to call that number 4. And then I would probably enjoy, I want to read the... Do you read Diana Gabaldon?
No, but I want to read the Hunger Games trio.
Oh, I really enjoyed that. So Dana Gabaldon has a new book in her Outlander series. So that's the other one I would bring because I haven't read it yet, and I really want to.
I haven't read fiction since I started writing books.
Yeah, me neither. And so that's like one of the things that it's in my like, I have a list before I start a third book, and it is like, read fiction. So those are the books that I would bring. That was a cool question.
Mm.
Okay, so our next question is from Maxine, and I believe it's directed towards me because it says, were you born in Canada, and if so, what made you move to the U.S.?
We're going to give you the boot if you don't answer this correctly.
Hey, I come from the boat side, not the boot side. So yes, I was born in Canada. I was born in London, Ontario, and we moved to the West Coast when I was 4, so I actually grew up in Sydney, British Columbia, which is on Vancouver Island. It's basically a town just outside the capital of British Columbia, Victoria. And I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Victoria, and I did my PhD at the University of Western Ontario back in London at the time I liked the symmetry. I did my first postdoc in Toronto, and then my husband was also a postdoc, and we were looking for postdoctoral fellowships in the same city, and the only city that offered us both jobs was Tucson, Arizona at the University of Arizona. So we are just part of the brain drain. And it was just as simple as that. At the time, we were on temporary visas, and we thought there was no way we were going to stay in the States, and this was just going to be a temporary thing, and then we would go back to Canada and get jobs. And it turns out that there were no jobs in Canada, and there were in the U.S. So my husband got a faculty job at Georgia Tech, which is why we live in Atlanta. And we've been in Atlanta for 6 years, I guess. My husband just made tenure, so... yay. And at this point, I don't see us moving back to Canada. So we've been here 9 years altogether, and our kids are American, and I still say cilantro. But as you can
tell. And how do you say that fatty green vegetable?
Avocado.
Mm. Don't lose that one.
I'll do my best. I still say Zed. I'm trying to think what else. Progress. All these other ones, all these words that I had no idea I was pronouncing differently than anybody else until people would, I would like be mid sentence and someone would say, wait, are you Canadian? Yeah, it's become like we have two homes. We have Canada home and America home. So that's my Canada to the US story.
Cool. I'm from America. America. Actually was born and raised in the metro DC area, except for about a 6-year period when my mom moved to Virginia Beach for middle school and high school, where I was raised in Virginia Beach for that 6 years. And then I came back to the Northern Virginia area to go to college and have been here since.
That's awesome. I live a long way away from where I grew up.
Mm. I have all my family here. It's nice. I would love to move to the West Coast. Like, I would move to the West Coast in a heartbeat if it weren't for everybody I know and love being here.
I really feel at home in West Coast culture. Like, I mean, I grew up in Canadian West Coast, but I even find like American West Coast culture really suits me. But you know, we're just following the jobs. So there's a job here. So that's why we're here. Next question is from Rebecca. Here is something we never hear about. What is your biggest paleo kitchen, i.e. cooking, fail story?
Oh, I think people have heard this one from me. It was when Matt fireballed during the Beyond Bacon shoot.
I've heard that one.
The charcoal grill, like, backfired, a fireball up his arms and up his face. And the first time in 12 years, I saw my husband without a beard, and my first question to him after I said, are you okay, was, how long do you think it'll take to grow back? And then I proceeded to send photos of his burned hands to his mother to get his mother to convince him to go to the doctor because he wouldn't listen to me. The second biggest fail was when we were trying to make the Anytime cookies for Eat Like a Dinosaur, and we had made one batch of cookies and photographed them, and they were awesome, and Matt forgot to write down what he did, and then we tried to replicate it because they're, like, egg-free. I think they're nut-free. They're just, like, no sweeteners. These kinds of things are impossible. And so if you don't write it down when you get it, then you're, you know, you've got problems. And we proceeded to yell at each other for like 4 hours straight, like literally making each other cry as we went through like 7 test batches of cookies trying to figure out what we'd done the first time.
My biggest kitchen fail story was the first time I tried to make a paleo version of waffles. This is actually before Eat Like a Dinosaur came out. It was pretty early on. And I, you know, made my batter, and the batter looked really good. And I poured it into the waffle iron, and it turned into this black gooey crust. And the waffle iron was actually like a wedding present, and I couldn't clean it, and it wouldn't come out. And I ended up having to throw out the entire waffle iron, which made me cry, and then be afraid to make waffles until Eat Like a Dinosaur came out. And those were the first waffles that I made. But then, because I was so scared of like killing another waffle iron, I got a cast iron waffle iron, which is like really designed to be done over like a campfire or like a barbecue, not on a like glass surface range. So then I had to like season it. And I think there was a number of attempts of the waffle recipe Eat Like a Dinosaur before I had the seasoning and the oil and the temperature right. And then when I got it, I think I was like jumping up and down. I was so excited. I've since bought a new waffle iron and I make waffles all the time. So it didn't scar me for life. And then there's a recipe coming in the Paleo Approach cookbook that is an applesauce spice cake. And so it's completely 100% Autoimmune Protocol. So it's nut-free, seed-free, egg-free, and of course, you know, grain-free. And so there's not a whole lot of ingredients left in order to do baking. So baking on the Autoimmune Protocol is extremely tricky. And so the first time I made it, it worked out. And it was like amazing. But the texture was a little bit dry. So I decided to start playing with the flours that I was using. So the second time I made it, it turned into snot. It was the most disgusting thing ever. And we started making the joke of like, it's snot cake. Ah! Uh-huh. and it was like disgusting. And then it was disgusting the next time I did it. So then I tried to remake the first version and then it didn't work. So I must have written something down wrong. So that recipe, when it comes out in the book, I think I made it like 25, 26 times. Because it was so tricky and because I knew, because the first time it was awesome, that it could be awesome if I just figured out what I had done. So that, I mean, actually, you know, I have kitchen fails pretty frequently.
Yeah, the only non-book related kitchen fail, because I think we're both, except your waffle one was non-book related, and then we both would have like a ton of book related ones just because it gets to be catastrophic. The only non-book related one that I can think of is this one time Matt tried to make an eggplant curry. Like in Thai restaurants, they make and like a Thai basil kind of infused eggplant curry that used to be my absolute favorite before I realized that was like the worst thing that I could eat for myself. And because it's a nightshade nightmare. And he made it for when my grandfather was coming over for dinner. So he doubled the batch because we used to make a double dinner and then give my grandfather like leftovers to take home. And it was inedible. It's the only thing any of us ever remembering that Matt made that was inedible, especially a savory food. Like it's easy to mess up baked goods, but like savory foods, you kind of, you know, if you're in the kitchen regularly, like you know how to not mess that stuff up.
I did one. I was trying to make a like Autoimmune Protocol friendly. I don't know. I was like taking the olive tapenade idea and trying to make it into a sauce for spaghetti squash noodles. And that we chucked. It was so disgusting.
Could have been like a pesto almost, but.
Well, yeah, I was trying. That was kind of like the inspiration. I was like olive tapenade, pesto, sweet potato noodles. Yeah, it was terrible. Like nobody would eat it. Maybe if I had a dog, the dog probably still wouldn't have eaten it. And it went entirely into the compost. There's lots of these stories. We just don't tell them because we want you guys to think we're professionals.
Well, and this should only go to show people, like, it's not actually easy and glamorous and beautiful what we're doing sometimes. We try to make it out like it is, but sometimes it's a nightmare behind the scenes, especially when you start doing book work and you add the stress of, like, you know, deadlines and sunsetting and all that kind of stuff to the mix.
So our next question is from Donna. How did you meet your husband?
I actually have a post on my blog. Well, we did a series of posts during our 10-year vow renewal, so you can just Google that. I'm sure, put a link in the show notes. But I feel like we've put a lot of links in the show notes, so maybe they'll get lost. Matt and I actually met through meetup.com. The interesting factoids are, A, nobody was meeting on meetup.com back when we met, and we were both in college at the time, so it was even more taboo that we weren't, like, meeting people at college. We both happened to go to the same college, so we actually physically met on campus, so for the first 5 years, we told everyone that we met at school. We physically did meet at school, but that's not how we introduced ourselves to each other. And the other interesting factoid is that both of us were too cheap to actually buy a membership to Meetup to Match.com. You can post a profile, or at least it was 12 years ago. I don't know. I haven't been on in a while. And you used to be able to post a profile for free, but if you wanted to connect with someone or talk with someone, you had to pay for a membership. So we both had posted profiles and had used like our AIM messaging name at the time as our same profile name. So I was able to kind of cross-reference what his name was and look him up on AIM messaging, and that's how we met. And that should just go to show what a pair we are, that we were able to navigate that system freely.
That's awesome.
So that's why we've never given Match.com credit for our perfect marriage, because we didn't actually use their service.
I met my husband... I did an undergraduate degree. My undergraduate degree was in physics, and my husband, as previously established, is a theoretical astrophysicist. So we actually were an undergrad at the University of Victoria at the same time. He was a year ahead of me, and met him because one day he was chatting in the Elliott Building lobby with the guy I had a crush on. So I went up to talk with the guy I had a crush on, and there was this like other random guy, which I totally didn't pay attention to, but I guess he noticed me. And then a few days later, we were in a student council meeting together for the physics department, and he was really funny, and then I noticed him then. And then we ended up basically getting to know each other entirely over email and what was at the time called VMS Talk, which is like, this was like the year the internet was invented. It was like the equivalent of instant messaging now, but it was like what instant messaging was in the olden days. And then eventually we weren't so shy and we actually talked to each other in person.
We're all just geeks.
Yep. Okay, we're running a bit late, and we've got three more questions here that we were going to ask. So I'm going to pick, how about I just pick my favorite one?
All right.
Oh, wait, there's my favorite two.
Well, you haven't asked the one that I knew was coming.
Yeah, well, I feel like I have to do that one. Okay, I'm going to do that one and one other one. So this question is from Chelsea. Day in the life schedule example. I want to know how you guys do it all.
Instagram.
You just Instagram things? No, go to Instagram.
Yes.
I don't Instagram as frequently as Stacy, but I will tell you that the way that I do as much as I do is that I never stop doing stuff. So I'm pretty much go, go, go all day. I don't do Facebook for fun. So I don't web surf for fun. So anything that I'm doing that's like looking something up on the internet, it's always related to my blog or, you know, was the books or, you know, something. It's always relevant to something, or if it's not, it becomes relevant because I blog about stuff I find interesting. And I don't watch very much TV. And so, you know, my secret is that I'm very efficient with my time, but I also don't waste time. So I'm often, trying to do two things at once, and I don't have space in my day I'm never bored. I don't read fiction. I don't have space in my day except for the space that I structure into it for time to like play with the kids or, meditate or something that's, along those lines. But I'm never sitting around going, huh, I wonder what I'm going to do next. Like I always have the next thing to do. I'm just, you know, I'm highly motivated and I have a really, really strong work ethic. So, that's how I do it all. It's kind of a sad answer, isn't it?
Also, we have a team of people, both of us. So what you think and you perceive that you see that's happening on our blog and our social media and all that kind of stuff, we both have multiple assistants that help us get all that done. And in my case, I have a husband who helps me get most of it done. So my short answer of, you know, check what I'm doing on Instagram is like, if you really want to know what my life's like, I put almost everything on Instagram, and that's me and my account. Everything else, the assistants, specifically Katie, my lead assistant, does almost all of. But for day-to-day, how it works is I literally have an alarm that goes off in the morning, and usually I'm awake before the alarm goes off. Because either the sun has risen or my kids are awake. And within 30 minutes, I am eating a protein shake. That's like my thing these days. And then, usually actually Matt makes the protein shake for me because he's awesome. And I'll sit in bed waiting for it, going through all the email, that's come in overnight and the messages that have come in overnight and everything that happens overnight, because I don't know why people aren't sleeping, but they're not. And I try to get rid of a bunch of messages before I'm even out of bed so that I can feel accomplished before I'm awake. Again, I'm not, you know, having a lot of time for perusing and chit-chatting and that sort of thing. It's like, oh, this needs to be responded to. Then I hang out with the kids and I get into the office a little later than most people. I get into the office usually 9:30, and that allows me to have time with the kids. I work all day at the office, and then I work out, and then I come home and I read the kids a story. Sometimes I'll be home in time for dinner. If I didn't work out, then I have dinner with the family. If I worked out, usually I've missed dinner and I'm just reading books. And then the kids go to bed. And then Matt and I usually work on blog and book stuff. We get most of our book work done on the weekends, however, because we don't do the photos for those ourselves. So when we're, you know, doing recipes and photographing them, Amy's here. But if we're testing recipes or writing the material for the books or drafting recipes or testing them before we're actually ready to shoot them, all of that's being done when Amy's not here on nights or weekends. So everybody always asks how we do it, but most of the blog stuff is getting done while I'm at work by either a team member or Matt.
Clearly, I need a mat.
I also have a post on my blog about time management that goes over all of this that might be interesting for someone to check out if they really want more information.
Cool. So our last question is from Holly. Despite all of the family-friendly treats you both blog about, what are your daily healing diets truly like?
This is my Instagram. So when I saw this question come in, I was like a little bit baffled because from my perspective, I feel like I am more than putting out what people could possibly want to see about what I'm actually eating. Like, I feel obnoxious about the amount of posts that I have on Instagram of soups. Like, I did a Flipgram last year and went back through all of the soup photos that I posted in 2013, and like Flipgram couldn't compact it all into 15 seconds. Like, so I have healthy foods almost every single day. You will not see treat foods in my feed except like weekends or when I'm doing something fun or we're having people over for dinner or somebody's birthday. Like when we say, or I'll speak for myself, when I say treats, I mean treats and I mean them as like special occasions. So it's either like a special afternoon lunch with me and the boys having like a mom and, you know, son date at Silver Diner where they'll get gluten-free French toast and I'll get a Reuben. Or it's, you know, when Sarah comes into town and we go to Happy Tart, or it's Mother's Day or something like that. But like on every single day, you can go through and look. And I know, Sarah, you've done posts and I've done posts too, where like we document the food that we eat every day on like a 21-day sugar detox, or, you know, we show people exactly like what we've consumed from the minute we wake up until the minute we go to sleep so that they can see portion sizes and exactly what we've eaten. And we've put all of that out there for people that they're looking for that. But certainly if, you know, I personally have a hard time of following certain people on media just because it seems like all they post is sweet treat recipes. And I happen to know that Sarah and I don't do that. Like, I know for a fact from having talked with Sarah about her social media strategy that we both feel very strongly about not doing only treat recipes because we don't want people to think that that's a healthy approach. And so, you know, I hope that that's not what people perceive when they see us in social media, because I feel like we've both made a concerted effort to put out there how very important nutrient-dense food is and how very important nourishing and healing your body with food is. And if, you know, someone is only eating treat type food, and by treat type food I mean not nourishing foods, I mean, you know, I've seen some stuff that I'm like, no, that's not healthy. Like, you know, it's that is like your fringe food. Don't pretend that that's your regular food. But if that's what people choose to do, that's their business. But what I'm saying is that I hope that people don't perceive that to be how I'm nourishing myself and my family, because I go out of my way to show that I have a soup and salad almost every single day, and that the family eats multiple vegetables for dinner, and that's what my kids eat. Like, there is no special meal. There's no, like, you know, the kids are getting something different. Those are the foods that my kids are eating. They eat scrambled eggs with veggies almost every single morning for breakfast, and they pack their own lunches with nutrient-dense foods, and then we eat a healthy dinner together with multiple vegetables and protein. So today the kids asked, like, they don't ask every day for something after dinner. Today the kids asked for something after dinner because there wasn't enough food. Like, we just, Matt didn't make enough because I have three growing boys and I train, and so it's impossible to feed us all. And the boys were like, we're still hungry, can we have something after dinner? And I was like, well, what would you like? Because I didn't have any more protein to give them. And they all looked at each other and looked at me and asked for an apple. Like, it's just, that's kind of how we roll. Now, on a different day, they might have asked for, we have frozen chocolate-covered bananas from Trader Joe's in the freezer, or they might have asked for, we have like homemade leftover ice cream in there from when we made ice cream several weeks ago. But that's the thing, is the ice cream is still in there from when we originally made it several weeks ago, because we don't eat a whole batch when we make it. And we're not making that stuff on the regular. So, I'm sorry. I had a soapbox on a question show. Darn.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be a show without a soapbox. gosh, I don't even know where to start answering that question. I mean, I basically eat day to day almost nothing that looks like treats.
Let's be clear. You eat an insane amount of raw veg. Like, someone else might be like thinking that you were a raw vegan if it weren't for like the pile of organ meat next to your raw veg. Like, you yes. are the most nutrient dense, clean eater I've ever seen in my life. And sometimes when you post photos of your food, I'm like, that is not even appetizing because it's so healthy. So that's why, like, this question, this question just kind of got under my skin a little bit. And I'm sorry to whomever asked it. I'm sure it wasn't your intention, but like, to me, I'm just, it's like a personal dig. Like, no, I don't eat a bunch of treats all the time. And if that's what, you know, someone thinks from seeing what our content is being put out, then we need to change the content that's being put out because it's not the intention at all.
Okay. I don't even have anything to add. I mean, I guess like I want to, I think I've already sort of established that for me, you know, I basically eat a really, really clean diet all the time, except for when, you know, every couple of months stress gets really crazy and then I go on a sugar binge for a couple of days. I feel really rotten and then I get back on the bandwagon. But my kids, even they're not eating a lot of this stuff. Like, I will work on a recipe during recipe development. I'll give a lot of it away or I'll put it in the freezer so it'll slow us down. And, you know, I might work on a sweet recipe, you know, maybe once every few weeks. I mean, I guess there was a time early on when I was transitioning my kids that we had a lot more of that in the house and I was working on those types of recipes more often. But now it's, you know, it's really like a Clif Kit bar is like the big sugary treat, or I let my kids have, gluten-free rice crackers because I can't keep them full, and rice crackers are really convenient, and that's like a huge treat. Like, it's, you know, I'm trying to explain to them, this is empty calories. You know, this does not, you know, help your body grow, but you just ate all of the crazy good food that I just made you and I have nothing else. So here, have some empty calories. And so really it's not part of our day-to-day life. They're treats. They're occasional treats. And by occasional, I mean like maybe like once or twice a month. My kids definitely, you know, will have some other sort of more fringe food. I don't regulate how much fruit they eat. So they eat, you know, lots of fruit as long as they're also eating vegetables. So we always have to say, you know, you have to eat your vegetables too. And you know, things like dried fruit, I don't really consider a treat. Although that, you know, I'm much more careful with how much or how often, but it's not something that I particularly worry about. So something like a, you know, paleo cookie or a paleo muffin, it's, or, you know, a cupcake from the gluten-free dairy-free bakery that's down the road. That's so awesome. Those are things that we have, you know, every few weeks. It's not something that's really super frequent in our home.
Cool.
We just answered a lot of questions.
It's been a while since we've answered questions. So.
I think that's why so many people had questions that were so much more practical.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in and supporting us for 100 episodes, everyone. I don't know what would compel you to do that, but we've made it. I don't know if I mentioned this, but a few weeks ago, Matt was doing some iTunes investigating, because when you've been on iTunes for like 100 weeks, you know, kind of lose the fervor of checking your stats all the time. And we were rated like within the top 5 of all health podcasts, like not just paleo, but like all health podcasts on iTunes. So thank you to everyone who's downloading and reviewing. We haven't even been like badgering you about that. And that's awesome. And of course it fluctuates and who knows what it is now, but like, it just so happened that the time that Matt was checking it, we were ranked super high. And, so thank you for everyone who is supporting us and in encouraging and reviewing and, clicking that little 5 stars. That really helps other people find the podcast. And over the course of 100 episodes, we've gone from like, you know, 2 people downloading to a lot of people downloading, and we hope that we can continue to give you good content. And yeah,
that's awesome. Thank you, everybody.
I should have screen captured it and sent it to you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was in Canada.
Your data was high. All right.
It was high. Ooh, I might get a really, really, really big bill. It's okay. I'll figure it out.
I tried to leave you alone for the most part.
It's a good thing you did, because a certain publisher was not.
Well, you can make him pay the bill then.
That's right. There you go.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week, everyone. Who knows on what, but it'll be episode 101.
That's going to be awesome.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is cool when you're part of a team.
Oh my gosh, that was supposed to discourage you from using that word, not encouraging you to sing.
It happens to be the theme song in the Ballantine household right now. And it's how I distract my kids from whining.
Yeah, Wesley, like, psycho loves that movie, so I understand.
We actually had a Lego spaceman smuggle home from Canada in somebody's shoe. And I think it was my youngest who did that, but we're not entirely sure because nobody's fessing up. So we just keep walking around going, spaceship! And it's just been really amusing. But that being said, we're all jet lagged, and so we're all easily amused.
Well, speaking of jet lag, I need to get to bed to recover from all this training that I'm doing. Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell everybody. Duh. When this airs, there's a introductory free Everybody Come Strongman on Saturday. What's this Saturday date? I'm going to mess this up. Oh, my goodness. My computer. Max, don't give you the good calendar very easily. Okay. So this Saturday, July 19th, 2014, there's an introductory free strongman seminar workshop followed by a paleo potluck at Nova Strength and Conditioning. And I will be there to support the coaches, Mike and Dustin, who are awesome, both going to nationals, to kind of go over some of that stuff. And it is for everybody of all levels, so feel free, and we'll talk about scaling and different activities and events and stuff like that that are in the sport. And then next Saturday, July 26th, I will be competing in the Commonwealth Games in Roanoke, Virginia, and you're welcome to attend. I will be attempting to earn my ticket to nationals, which means I need to place top three among all of the women competitors. So if you're in the area, come by and give me a shout out, and that would be awesome.
That does sound awesome, which makes me want to sing again. We better really end the podcast now.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Everything is awesome.
I think Matt just needs to make that the new intro theme song opener.